We're off to the races, powered by The Racing Biz, your independent voice for Mid-Atlantic racing and breeding. On the web at www.theracingbiz.com and on the radio every Saturday morning, it's Off to the Races. Here's your host.
Hey, good morning, everybody, and welcome to Off to the Races Radio, powered by The Racing Biz, theracingbiz.com. My name's Frank Vespi, and for the next 60 minutes, we're going to be talking thoroughbred racing and breeding in Maryland, across the Mid-Atlantic, and around the country. Today's show, as always, powered by The Racing Biz, theracingbiz.com. You can catch us on the socials, of course. Look for At The Racing Biz, and also our free mobile app available at theracingbiz.com, available for your Apple and Android devices. And by the way, happy Preakness. It's the biggest racing day in Maryland. The middle jewel of the Triple Crown is here. It is Preakness Day at Pimlico Racecourse. We're not going to leave any clubs in the bag today. We got a fun show on tap, some fantastic guests, plenty to talk about here on Off to the Races Radio. Coming up in a little bit, just a few minutes, we're going to have Ramiro Restrepo. He's co-owner of Kentucky Derby winner and Preakness favorite Mage. He's got a great story in his own right. Pretty cool stuff. A story really of fulfilling kind of a family destiny and being able to kind of give back to the older generations who gave you a chance to get where you are. Good stuff coming up with Ramiro Restrepo. At the bottom of the hour, we're going to visit with John Salzman Jr. He's the trainer and co-owner of Coffee with Chris. Coffee with Chris bidding to be the first Maryland bred in 40 years to win the Preakness. Can he do it? We're going to hear John's thoughts coming up bottom of the hour. The last Maryland bred to win the Preakness, that was Deputed Testimony in 1983. Interesting factoids there. Deputed Testimony was the eighth Maryland bred to win the Preakness and the third in 18 years. So it's been a little more common in the past than it has been in the last 40 years. Going to talk with John Salzman Jr., see if Coffee with Chris can be the one to break the schneid. Going to close things up at the end of the hour, do a little handicapping with Nick Hahn, as we often do. So that should be fun. Also on top, Richard Hackerman going to join us with his Preakness pick, and Baltimore Banner sports editor Chris Corman talk about what the Banner has going on this weekend. The Banner, editorial partners of The Racing Biz. So looking forward to those conversations. But first, let's take a look back at yesterday, because yesterday, today's the Preakness. Yesterday was Black Eyed Susan Day. Black Eyed Susan is the filly analog for the Preakness. It's the grade 2 9 furlong race for fillies. For me to say, let's start with the featured grade 2 Black Eyed Susan stakes. And if you had taxed, well, you collected.
On the outside is Tax with a furlong left to go. Who's your fillies in front trying to stay on? On the outside, Tax, the two grays are slugging out of the final furlong. Tax has grabbed Who's Your Filly. Tax in front with a 16th left to go. It's going to be Tax pulling the upset in the Black Eyed Susan Stakes. Tax and Rafael Bejarano.
Trained by Randy Morrison, ridden by Rafael Bejarano, one-time claiming horse Tax rallied from off the pace for an easy win in the race for sophomore fillies. Just her second career win, two career wins for Taxton, and one of them in the Black Eyed Susan. Now, one race earlier, the Kenny McPeak trained Rattle and Roll rallied from second to last to run down longtime leader Speed Bias on the wire to win the Grade 3 Pimlico Special. Here's how it sounded.
Here's Rattle and Roll, the center of the track. Speed Bias desperate to hang on. Now they're head-to-head for the lead for the final furlong. We'll put the up on Keystone Field in third. Rattle and Roll, Speed Bias in for more on the inside. Speed Bias, Rattle and Roll in a fight down to the finish here at Pimlico. Rattle and Roll, Speed Bias, Speed Bias, and Rattle and Roll in a photo in the Pimlico Special. What a thriller.
Dave Rodman on both of those calls. Rattle and Roll gets kind of the miracle Bob there, beats Speed Bias in the Grade 3 Pimlico Special. Now, the special used to be arguably the top non-Breeders' Cup race for older horses in the country. Certainly on the short list of those best races. Tons of horses of the year. Hall of Famers came through the Pimlico Special over a number of years. Asked winning trainer Kenny McPeak afterwards if that gave the win extra meaning to him, even though the Special's maybe not quite what it used to be. Here's what he had to say.
It means a lot. I've seen so many really good horses win here this race. The Pimlico Special's been historically one of the greatest races in America. We'd love to see a grade one again, but, you know, we've got to lift the sport up a little bit. And the older horse division, you know, you never can tell where everybody's going, but maybe he'll justify raising the grade.
All right, Kenny McPeak there. Love to see it a grade one again. Love to see the Pimlico Special get back to its historic position as one of the most important races for older horses in the United States. I think it's something that could happen, something that should happen. Would love to see it, and obviously Kenny McPeak would too. And interestingly enough, the trainer who ran second in that race was Speed Bias. Ron Moquette said basically the same thing. He said that this is a race I've grown up wanting to win. I always wanted to win this race, and so the Special still holds a lot of meaning for people. It's not what it used to be, but let's hope that one of these days it gets back to that position. The Pimlico Special, first running in the Pimlico Special was one of the most famous races ever run. Seabiscuit defeating War Admiral in the inaugural Pimlico Special. Today, the Special goes to Rattle and Roll for Kenny McPeak. All right, again, today, Preakness Day. 148th running of the Grade 1 Preakness Stakes at Pimlico Racecourse. The middle jewel of the Triple Crown. Now, one important note. First Mission, the number 8 horse in today's Preakness, and a horse that many people thought was going to be a major, major contender in the Preakness. First Mission has been scratched from the Preakness. First Mission will not run in the Preakness. That was announced 7 o'clock on Friday morning, so no First Mission in the Preakness. Take out the 8 horse in your program. So that's going to have an impact on how the race is run, going to have an impact on who might win. A couple of our taped segments that follow this are going to refer to First Mission, but do note First Mission, a scratch from today's Grade 1 Preakness Stakes. Okay, let's kick things off. I want to start with, I want to talk with Baltimore Banner sports editor Chris Corman about what they got going on thebaltimorebanner.com for Preakness Weekend. Chris Corman, good morning. Thank you for joining us here on Off to the Races Radio. We've been enjoying our partnership so far this Preakness season with the Baltimore Banner. TheBaltimoreBanner.com is the website. Chris, the sports editor.
The Coffee for Chris story is one that I think, you know, I said this before the Derby, I sort of root for great stories. And the Salzman family, sort of workaday trainers here in Maryland, pushing to keep going in this sport. Kyle Goon, our columnist, wrote a column with talking to them, and John Salzman Sr. says that he feels a little trepidation about his sons going into the business with the way it's changed. So to see them be able to be in this race, and you know, I know it's a huge long shot, 20-1 on the morning line, but I think that would be a really good story, an interesting story. It's long overdue for a Maryland horse to win a Triple Crown race, and let alone here in Baltimore. So I think that would be the most interesting story for our reader, but First Mission is looking pretty good coming off the Lexington Stakes.
Yeah, I agree with you, as you cited my handicapping article on TheBaltimoreBanner.com. I land on First Mission, although I reserve all rights to change my mind and talk to more people. But I'll tell you what, I'll make a quick case for Coffee with Chris. There's not a lot of pace in this race, and I talked to John Jr. This morning, and Thursday that we're talking, and I said, well, this is how I could see this race shaking out. I think National Treasure breaking from the rail goes to the front. I think First Mission breaking from the outside kind of attaches himself to his shoulder, you know, half a length off or so. And I said, I could see you sitting third, a length or two behind those two horses. And he said, that would be a press. And I could see this race being slow enough early that, you know, two or three of the horses in front early don't come back. And right. So you make a little case for them. I mean, Mage is a better horse. There's no question. And some of these others are certainly more accomplished than Coffee with Chris. But, hey, what the heck? It's a horse race, right? The only way you win is you put a horse in there.
Yeah, and that's what they said. You know, he's feeling good. He's run well. He's healthy. Why not try? This is, if it's ever going to happen, this is it for them. So, you know, I hope it's at least a good story for us.
Hey, yeah, that's what we all root for. Chris, what else can people find on the BaltimoreBanner.com?
You know, we'll have full coverage of the race. We're going to have, I think we have 15 people credentialed, so we'll have plenty of photos of the party, the racing. We'll have coverage of everything going on around the track. We'll be talking to Maryland political leaders about what's happening with, you know, obviously there's been so much discussion of whether racing is going to consolidate at Pimlico, and that certainly seems to be the trend right now. And then where will training take place? You know, so we'll be covering some of that. We'll have race coverage. We'll, you know, we've been all over the safety story. You know, Jonas Schaefer, who generally covers the Ravens for us, has a in-depth report on sort of how things are trending there and what has been done at Pimlico to ensure that this, that the week goes okay. So, you know, we'll have comprehensive full race coverage, and I hope everyone heads over to the Baltimore Banner to read.
All right, thebaltimorebanner.com is the website. Editorial partners with us at the Racing Biz, theracingbiz.com, and lots of good stuff going to be on the banner Saturday, Sunday, a lot of Preakness coverage, a lot of things going on. Check it out. Chris Corman, thank you so much for joining us here on Off to the Races.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Frank. Appreciate it.
That was Chris Corman from our editorial partners at thebaltimorebanner.com. Check out the Baltimore Banner. Lots of good stuff going on there. If you care about news from Maryland or Baltimore and or Baltimore, Baltimore and or Maryland, however that's constructed, if you care about news from Baltimore, care about news from Maryland, good stuff happening at thebaltimorebanner.com. Again, happy Preakness Day. It is Preakness 148, May 20th here. And one important scratch, again, want to reiterate, and we'll do this a couple more times, I'm sure, but want to reiterate, First Mission, the 8-horse in this evening's Preakness Stakes has been scratched. So no 8-horse, no First Mission in the Preakness. That should have a pretty significant impact on how the race is run. Now, want to give a shout out to a couple of our friends here at Off to the Races, a couple of the good friends who helped make this program possible. Want to give a shout out to them, give a shout out to Richard Hackerman, attorney at law. We're going to talk with him a little bit. RichardHackerman.com. Our friends at Wanamakers, Wanamakers.com, online horse auctions. Wanamakers having a sale this coming week here, online horse auction, Wanamakers.com. Got a lot of good stuff. It's a really convenient way. It's a really neat idea, a convenient way to for people to buy a horse when they want a horse and sell a horse when they want to sell a horse and not have to wait for a major sale to come up with all the attendant expenses and waiting and complications. No fuss, no muss. Get a horse bought or sold. Wanamakers.com. They've got a sale coming up this coming week. So check it out at Wanamakers.com. You want to buy a sale. Good friends of this program. Also, True Valor Stallion standing at Northview Stallion Station. Another friend in the Maryland Horse Breeders Association. MarylandHorse.com. Check them out, too. All good friends of this program, and we appreciate them all very much. So lot of things going on there, and it is Preakness Day. As I said, first mission out of the Preakness, seven horses remain in. Mage going to be the strong favorite in the Preakness. Kentucky Derby winner looking to annex another important race and head towards the Belmont with a triple crown in his sights. So exciting stuff going on there. Chris Corman in the last segment. Let us move on to, let's bring in Ramiro Restrepo. We taped this interview at Pimlico a little bit earlier this week. Good stuff here. He bought Mage. He and Gustavo Delgado Jr. were kind of the driving forces behind buying the horse that became Mage. Mage was purchased at the Fasig Tipton Mid-Atlantic 2-year-old in training sale. That sale coming up Monday and Tuesday at the Timonium Fairgrounds. And you can be pretty sure Ramiro and Gustavo will be in evidence at that sale. But Ramiro's got a pretty interesting story, pretty interesting backstory. Family been involved in racing a long time, dating back to South America, and kind of fulfilling some dreams in recent weeks. But you don't need to hear that from me. Let's hear it from Ramiro Restrepo. All right, we're on the backstretch at Pimlico here, the Wednesday before the Preakness, with Ramiro Restrepo, co-owner of Kentucky Derby winner Mage. How cool does that sound, Ramiro Restrepo, co-owner of Kentucky Derby winner Mage?
Gosh, and just to think about it, it's still surreal, you know? You're digesting it. You're trying to digest that, but it's an incredible feeling.
So take us back to the Derbies. Early in the race, Mage is way out of it, but the pace is very fast. So at that point, you got to be thinking to yourself, well, if we're good enough, we might be around. What's the moment you start to say, I think we're going to win the Kentucky Derby, and what does that feel like?
Oh, I didn't really know that we won until we crossed the wire. But when they turned for home, I went from like being very practical about the race and just being very observant and calm. And when they turned for home and we got into view like five wide, that's when I lost my mind. And, then I started rooting, and then the more I rooted, and the more that I rooted, the more the horse kind of like responded on screen. So it felt like I was bringing him home, you know, and then I just went crazy. And he passed two fills, and then I saw Angel of Empire coming a little bit. So you're just not sure until you're sure. But
right.
it was a great, what is that, quarter mile plus home. That was,
yeah.
That was pretty awesome.
Yeah. I knew Dave Mann a little bit. He was one of the funny side guys. And I remember talking to him and how they were doing snow angels in the infield and stuff. And were you thinking about doing snow angels in the infield?
You know, I didn't even have a shot. The minute I made it onto the track, I got tackled like rugby style by five, six of my awesome friends, my best friends from Kentucky. And it was just an amazing, like, just, it was like a mosh pit, you know what I mean? Like, if you just won the game and, you know, you hit the winning shot and you get mobbed by your teammates. So there was no time to think about, like, that kind of celebration. It was just the mosh pit of fun. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. So you guys were very consistent, you and Gustavo Delgado Sr., Gustavo Jr., the trainer and assistant trainer and your co-owners. You were very consistent after the Derby. The horse is doing great, but we're going to wait for about a week to make a decision on the Preakness. What were they telling you, and what did you want to see from the horse before you made a decision to come to Baltimore?
Sure. Like, the minute he got to Kentucky from Florida, you can see a change in his attitude, in his eating habit, in his coat, and he just seemed so much more focused at the task at hand. It's like if he came out of the Florida Derby with like a lesson learned, and he's such a smart horse. We just wanted to see all these vital signs continue after giving, you know, a mile and a quarter effort, just to make sure that everything was still there. We didn't want a regression, and on the contrary, everything not only remained the same, but it was like an uptick in those same things. So we wanted to give it, to make sure that he would do that for the full week, and he did. So we made contingency plans that came to fulfillment, which was to come here.
So do you, it sounds like you feel like he's doing even better now than he was before the Kentucky Derby.
You know, it sounds a little wild to say something like that, and I know people might think that, you know, you're just, you know, talking in cliches, or, you know, being a someone who like a well wisher and a dreamer.
Going over there.
But it's just the reality of the horse. You know, he wasn't worked super hard to make his debut. So it's not like we really got to the bottom for his debut.
Sure.
You know, we actually knew we thought he might even, see, that's where you want to get to right there. You just want for the horse to keep coming. And he's been doing that with his workload before the maiden. The maiden made him, found a youth been a Florida Derby fit, the Florida Derby and a Kentucky Derby fit. And he keeps on going. So you're just hoping that continues, and it looks to our naked eye that it is. So
were you thinking Derby? I mean, when I talked with Gustavo Delgado Jr., he was saying that they thought he would put on a show in his debut, which he did. And then after that, they said, okay, let's give him two shots to earn Derby points.
That was a smart move, yeah.
At what point did you guys start saying, yeah, this could be a Derby horse? Because obviously he was a little late to get to the races,
right,
traditionally for getting to the Derby.
You know, it was not necessarily he's a Derby horse. It was like, let's see if he can make himself a Derby horse. You know what I mean? Like, just, we were actually thinking of an allowance second time out, but it was a mile and an eighth that they wrote in the book. So we were like, geez, to jump up from 7/8 to, you know, two extra furlongs, this mile and a 16th race would be for that much more money. That we looked at the probables in the race, and to go a short stretch mile and a 16th with what we thought at the time was like a speed horse on his home track, it was like, this might make the most sense,
uh-huh,
you know? And if for some reason he does put up some points, it might put us in a better shot for the following prep race, if that's what how he performs.
Mm-hmm.
But by running fourth, with the amount of experience he gained in that fourth, he hit the gate coming out, broke sideways. He got cut off coming out of the gate. He went 5-1 on the first turn. He was wide down the backside. He got bumped by Forte. He was bumped by Rocket Cannon while going wide, and he still kept trying.
Yeah.
The lessons learned in that race were more than coasting wire to wire in an easy allowance.
Sure. Yeah.
And he came out of the race physically feeling so great that we're like, what do we do? Do we go Lexington, wait for the Preakness? Do we go Bluegrass? Do we go Florida Derby? There were so many options. And after, you know, speaking to racing offices and going over potential PPs and everything, it made sense to stay home, and which we did. And we worked him a little different. He caught some dirt in his workouts to try to see how he would sit.
Mm-hmm.
How'd he take that? And he handled everything professionally in the morning. So we told Louis, if he breaks, doesn't break great, just let him sit. Don't chase the pace how we had instructed to in the Fountain of Youth.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
He sat and, you know, showed a new dimension.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I had thought he, you know, watching the Fountain of Youth, I thought he ran great in that race, given second career start, all the stuff that you referenced happened to him. And I had, you know, I'm not smart enough to have bet on Mage in the Kentucky Derby, but I think I put some people on him because I said, well, if you like Forte, how do you not like Mage in this spot? I'm guessing you guys had a nice bet on him.
I hope the tax man isn't listening. No, look, we had, coming into the race, the winners of the big four were really highly respected in our book. You know, Angel and I are part of this thing, and Forte did his thing, and Tapitrice did his thing, and Practical Move did their thing. But when we looked at the runner-ups of those races, we felt, in our comment, we were like the fifth, you know, like the number one runner-up of the preps. And then when two of them withdrew, we just had the confidence that we'd be top three. So as a horse player, how we handicapped it, it was worth a couple bucks on that.
Talking with Romero Restrepo, co-owner of Kentucky Derby winner Mage, here a couple days before the Preakness. And Romero, this is, culmination's not the right word because everything, life is a process, but this is sort of the highest heights for kind of generations of your family. You talked about parents and grandparents. Talk a little bit about that background and how that sort of sweetens the pot for you.
You know, My family in Colombia, South America, horse racing is not at the level of a Chile or Argentina or even Brazil or heck, even a Venezuela. It was more of a sportsman's industry. You know, it was by an upper class that ran it as a, you know, as more for the love of the game, mm-hmm. rather than an industry behind it. My grandfather and his brothers and their father were known for their ability to train horses, to ride horses. They bred horses. They owned their own horses there, and they trained for a lot of people there in that industry. When they came to America in the 60s, just a different climate. When you come over as an immigrant in the 60s than you do in 2020 or 2010, not right. speaking the language. It's just a different world that we're in, you know?
Sure.
And from the economy, the scale, having to come over, they had to just restart their lives and work from scratch just to get going. My mother was the youngest of the seven. She was 12 or 13
okay.
when she came over, so she actually did high school and college here. But her brothers and my grandfather had to do hot walking and grooming and to work their way up to foremans and assistants to finally have enough to buy their own horses and, you know, a couple
mm-hmm.
and be trainers. They never reached the heights of graded stakes wins and things like that, Frank, but the time and dedication that they gave to this, I mean, like gladiators. Seriously, they had the creed of, like, we were born on the backstretch, we'll die on the backstretch, mm-hmm. or at the track, you know? Mm-hmm. This was their lives, man. And since I was a kid, I would hear it from them, like, we're going to have us a horse in the Derby, we're going to make it. And that day never came. My grandpa passed away. My two uncles, time caught up with them, and they retired from the business. And fortunately for me, when my mother met my father in college and they had more, like, you know, economic success, I was born on the opposite end of the spectrum. I was blessed, man. I grew up on Key Biscayne. I was the son of a horse owner and my mother. We ran 30 plus horses. We had a couple of graded stakes participants. We had a track record holder on the inner at Aqueduct. So I grew up differently than my uncles and grandparents did. But there was like a trade. They let me, my uncles convinced my mother to let me go help them out, like summer at Saratoga.
Okay.
So I got to be around the barn a lot and do, like, you know, take off the bandages, do the feed, the water buckets, hot walk, lead them to the track on race day, things like this. So, and be a bird, you know, like a rail bird, you know, mm-hmm. watching mm-hmm. a lot of great horses around that time frame, you know, those early 90s, like Hansel, Corporate Report, Fly So Free, Turn Back the Alarm, Meadow Star, you know, it was really cool seeing those horses like right in front of you and a lot of that learned. But just being able to see how much life these guys, my family, gave to the sport, you know what I mean? Like, in the most blue-collar way, is just dedicating everything at the expense of their kids,
mm-hmm.
relationships with my cousins, like just dedicating their lives. And maybe that's why I was so relaxed Derby week, because I felt I already had won. I did what my grandpa and uncles wanted me to do, which was get to the Derby. I got them there. And they came for the walkover. Like, they're 77 and 82, and they came.
Oh, wow.
So it's like, I did it. Like, I won. Like, the fact that the race was an afterthought. You know what I mean? I know we had a talented horse. I know we were going to get embarrassed. I know we were going to be, we were top 3, 4, 5, in my opinion. But, like, the pressures of we got to win or we're expecting to win, I already had won. So the fact that it happened, forget it. You lose it, dude. You lose your mind. And, you know, you're hugging with them, you're selling with them. It's crazy, man. It's crazy.
It's really good stuff. It's a great story. All right, I'm going to let you go. Ramiro Restrepo, thank you so much. Good luck in the Preakness.
Thanks, my brother. Thanks, Frank.
It's an easy enough story to root for there. Ramiro Restrepo, the Delgado senior and junior, and the ownership team, and all the folks behind Mage, the Kentucky Derby winner, 15-1, rallying from well off the pace to win the Derby. Now going to be a strong favorite in today's 148th running of the Preakness Stakes. But certainly there are other horses we might want to take a look at, including a local hopeful. Local hopeful is named Coffee with Chris. He's a Maryland bred. He's Maryland based at Laurel Park with trainer John Salzman Jr., owned by Salzman along with Anthony Geruso and Fred Wasserloos. And he's a neat story in his own. And look, it's been 40 years since a Maryland bred won the Preakness. 40 years, that's a long time, man. And, you know, three Maryland breds won the Preakness in a period of about 17 or 18 years. You had Kauai King, you had BBB, you had Deputed Testimony in 1983, and A Barren Wasteland since 1983. You've had two runners-up. You had Oliver's Twist in 1995. That was also trained and bred, by the way, by Billy Boniface. Billy, the trainer, breeder, co-owner of Deputed Testimony. And then in 2002, I believe, you had Magic Wisner run a late closing second for Nancy Alberts. That was the Nancy Alberts show. She bred that horse. She owned that horse. She trained that horse. She galloped that horse. That horse ran huge. Magic Wisner second behind War Emblem in the Preakness Stakes, but ever since, got a whole lot of nothing. So what about Coffee with Chris? Let's talk with trainer John Salzman Jr. and get his take on what about Coffee with Chris.
Well, John Salzman Jr., we're just a couple days out from Preakness 148. First time here. How's the whirlwind treating you?
It's quite an experience. I'm enjoying it. I mean, it's overwhelming. It's a lot. I think I'm learning why nobody comes real early anymore. And I wish I could have stayed at Laurel and just trained under the radar and came in on Saturday morning like a normal race, but with the protocols, they wouldn't let us do it. But it's okay. We're going to get through it.
So your horse had done well in the private terms. He won the Miracle Wood. Comes to the Tessio. You guys had already paid the Triple Crown nomination fee. So if he wins the Tessio, he's in the Preakness. He doesn't win the Tessio. What's the thought process for you and your team from there to say, well, let's go to the Preakness anyway?
Well, the big thing is coming up, you know, paying $30,000 is not easy for me. But the thing with that race, it was a win and you're in. And my horse didn't run a bad race, and he didn't have everything his way. He was pressed the whole way on the lead. It was the first time a mile and an eighth. And the more I thought about it, getting beat two lengths, he didn't quit. He didn't stop. He kept digging. He got beat two lengths. And I woke up in the middle of the night thinking I'm letting two lengths decide whether I'm going to win a Preakness or not. So I come up with the money, and here we are.
That's a great I love the thought process there. And I love the idea of, like, the horse ran good. We weren't that far away. Things break a little differently. We win. And if we win, we definitely go. So maybe we just go ahead and go anyway.
Yeah, correct. I mean, it was all. And I mean, I entered at Monmouth in the Long Branch, and that was a win, and you're in the Haskell. And I really thought about it. And there was a couple. It was not an easy spot. I mean, there's been a lot of nice three-year-olds around, believe it or not. I mean, there was a big race in New York the same day, 200,000 grade three. They ran one Derby day, a 600,000. I don't know where they're all coming from. I mean, and then when you started listening to what happened at the Derby, horses were falling by the wayside. I just took it all in stride, and my owners were all on board. You know, win, lose, or draw, we've all decided we're going to take the chance. I like to win. I try to place my horses where they can win. I don't come over here to finish second and third, but you know, I know I'm a little out of line right now, but hey, we're going to take a chance and see if we can make it happen.
Well, you know, a funny thing is I was talking with Billy Boniface the other day, who bred and trained Deputed Testimony, the most recent Maryland bred to win the Preakness in 1983. And I said, Billy,
why do you think no Maryland bred has won in 40 years? And I think there's a lot of reasons, of course, but one of them, he said, is, well, guys don't like to take a shot anymore. They're too concerned about win percentages and whatever, and they don't always take a swing when they got a pretty nice horse. It's almost as if you spoke with him, you know, about that, because that's exactly what you guys are doing.
Oh, we're swinging. We're swinging. I mean, but it's funny. I sing that song in karaoke, swinging. But no, it's...
You'd be singing that song if you win on Saturday. Boy,
I don't know if I'll make it if we win that race on Saturday. I'm hoping, believe me. I'm praying every night, but... Yeah, we're taking a shot, you know, and we're here. It's not like it's costing me a fortune to ship and all new place. The horse has run over this racetrack. He's been here. So, and the track surface is quite almost the same as Laurel. So it's not a big change. You know, the worst case scenario, I mean, just want him to have a good, safe trip, and he'll give his effort. He runs hard every time.
So let's talk about the Preakness itself. The trip you want is what exactly?
I mean, I want a good break. I'm in the middle. There's a speed horse. I think the one horse is probably going to want to show some speed. And I think Brad Cox on the outside is going to want to show some speed. So I'm going to let Jamie handle that. He's pretty good on a speed horse. I don't have to be on the lead, but I think I'll be forwardly placed. I just hope we can slow the pace down and not set it up for the closers. I mean, if we can all save a little horse down the backside and give them a breather, I think when they turn for home, it'll be a horse race.
So I kind of was envisioning it, and I was almost imagining, like you said, the one and the eight going to show speed. I was almost thinking, like, I could see Jamie sitting a length or two off those two, and then at the quarter pole, you see if you're good enough.
That would be the perfect trip. I mean, if they decide they both want to go, like I say, this horse is very versatile. He doesn't – I believe he's a little better running at a horse. I mean, Jamie asked him at the quarter pole. He goes to those horses. The other day he was on the lead, and they got to him, but he didn't give up. I mean, he kept digging. I mean, and I watch that rerun 100 times. I watch races at – normal races I watch, not just his. Every horse I run, I go back and watch the rerun. What happened here? What happened there? Will he go another 16th? And I don't think it's a problem. I mean, I think he's going to give his effort. His numbers are a touch slower than the other horses, but Maryland seems to be a little, you know, the numbers in New York, California, them places seem to be a little more inflated. I haven't quite figured that out yet, but I just know that I've run some two-year-olds and stuff that break track records, and they don't get the number as a horse wins in New York or something. So I'm not a big number guy, you know, I just, I did look at him. But if he can go forward just a couple clicks, I think we'll be right there.
Talking with John Salzman Jr., trainer of Preakness Hopeful and Maryland's favorite at the moment, Coffee with Chris. And you just said something that made me think of your father trained Extra Heat, the great Hall of Fame sprinter. And I was talking with Kenny Taylor one time, one of the owners of Extra Heat, about this very issue of sort of New York numbers versus Maryland numbers. And the interesting thing he said was that he said, you don't see New York horses coming here and winning very often. He said, we don't go there and win, but they don't necessarily come here and win either. And that would sort of speak to maybe the numbers aren't quite calibrated exactly.
I'm a firm believer in that. And I mean, I had a big discussion, not a discussion, an argument one time when Extra Heat was as good as she could be. And she was not on the list of, I think it was Mike Watchmaker or it was Andy Beyer. You know, they used to put the top 10 three-year-old fillies or what, and she wasn't on the list. And they had a meeting here Preakness Week, and they were having interviews and like a seminar or something. And I just had to go, and I got in a heated battle with them because I said, what exactly does it have to do? What does a horse have to do to be on this list? And they didn't know who I was. So they questioned me, like, why are you asking this question? I said, well, there's a filly here that's probably one of the best fillies in the world, Extra Heat, and you don't have her on your list. And it was the dumbest answer I ever heard in my life, and it was because you have to run long. I said, what does that make a difference? If a sprinter or a long horse, there's two different things. And that was his answer. And I said, I couldn't, I don't quite remember the whole conversation, but it it was a heated battle. I mean, not cussing or anything, but I was very upset that, and it doesn't mean nothing. It really didn't mean anything. But like even her numbers, if you went back the numbers of the races she was winning here, they weren't compared to New York. But she went to New York and kicked their butts. So, I mean, I've always been a firm believer in that. I don't know why it is, but I just think it's something to do with the maybe the publicity or something, or maybe they think it's a better horse. I don't have an answer for why, but I know it is.
It's an interesting point. So talk about this for a minute. Obviously, you guys are, as you said earlier, taking a swing here. What does this mean to your owners, Fred Wasserloos and Anthony Jeruso?
Well, Anthony, he's a new guy, and I'm going to tell you something. I've never seen a guy so excited. When we win the private terms, we hadn't even spoke about the Preakness. He's got two tables right here somewhere on the glass with 16 people coming. We didn't make this decision to run in the Preakness until last Friday when I had to scratch at Monmouth. So he was more prepared than any of us. And I don't even remember when it was. He said, I think when he bought these tickets, he told me, he says, look, I want to make that walk of fame with you in the Preakness. That's all I ask. I'll get you tickets. I'll get you tables. I'll get you whatever you want. But if we go to the Preakness, I'm walking with you over. And I said, okay. And it's funny. Last night he texted me. He said, you didn't forget our conversation, did you? So he's really excited about it. I mean, which I am. And Fred is. But Fred's been a little under the weather, so he's not coming.
No, that's
and that's sad. I mean, they're great owners. Fred's been with me for a long time. I mean, he was part of Limited View. He's been with me for some time. I don't know how long, but what great owners. I mean, and I'm fortunate enough to have all good owners. I mean, Bird Moberly, I trained for her. Her mother, you know, told her when she passed that I was going to be the trainer, and I really appreciated that. I mean, I that meant a lot to me.
Yeah, and Bird and Grady have done well with you. They've had a couple of nice horses.
Yeah, we've won some races, and last year they had a couple nice horses, Locomotive, Buff My Boots. Actually, they only had four or five horses, and they were nominated for Owner of the Year in Maryland. That was a big feat. I mean, they didn't get it, but, hey, it was just a part of being nominated.
Just to be in the conversation is pretty nice. All right, well, last thing, and I'll let you go. I know you got probably 50 more of these interviews to do, but you know, the odds of getting to the Preakness for any horse at any price point are very small. You guys have a $2,000 horse you're bringing over here in a couple of days. Do you already feel a little bit like a winner because you beat the odds, such long odds?
I enjoy this so much, the young horses. I have a great eye for horses. I buy horses every year cheap and somehow win stakes with them. It's just so amazing. Everybody says, what's the big deal? You win the first couple races. Well, if you look at the horse, I think I win the boy race. I give $6,000 for him. I'm out. That horse, I'm out. I made money already with this horse. And I think he's going to go on to be a nice horse. I'm going to run both of those in the $150,000 added at Belmont weekend up there. So, I mean, the other one, now Bird's Filly, I gave a little more money for, but she has a little more paper. And, you know, I do this year after year after year after year. I win these first races, and people are, well, what's the big rush? Well, I'm not running against $300,000 or $400,000 horses or these Grand Motion horses or these horses that are sitting waiting to mature. Mine are matured, made their money, and done. When they come around, I'm already ahead of them. So it's just my mindset, and then, you know, I'll go on the next year. I'll go on and buy some more. I usually buy five or six at a time, you know, and it's worked out well for me.
All right, good stuff. John Salzman, Jr., trainer of Coffee with Chris. Coffee with Chris, 20-1 on the morning line for the 148th running of the Preakness. Good luck, my friend.
All right, thank you very much.
Coffee with Chris, going to be a long shot in the Preakness Stakes this evening, but you know what? The way the race shapes up a little bit might have a better chance than the odds are going to reflect. Should be probably sitting second in the early going, probably National Treasure going to go to the front. Coffee with Chris going to be chasing. Pace shouldn't be too overwhelming. At least we're not expecting a Derby pace. And might be a situation, you know, once in a while in races like this, you know, where there's only a couple of speed horses, sometimes they run 1-2 all the way around the track. That's certainly what John Saltzman Jr. going to be hoping for there, trainer of Coffee with Chris. What do you think? Let's bring in Richard Hackerman, attorney at law, friend of this program, see what he thinks.
Going to be joined here by Richard Hackerman, attorney at law, good friend of Off to the Races Radio. But Richard, I don't want to talk about law stuff now. What the question on my mind, on everybody's minds is, what you got in the Preakness?
Well, the favorite, Madge, looks, am I pronouncing it right, Frank? Madge?
I believe it's Mage.
Mage, okay. I think he looks good. The Derby winner is always tough coming to Pimlico. But I am going to put at least a few dollars on the local favorite, Coffee with Chris.
All right. You know, I've talked to some people. There's a little bit of interest in Coffee with Chris. Tell me why. Make that case.
There's not a whole lot of speed in this race. I think with Jamie Rodriguez, who is essentially a speed rider, I do think he makes the front. I've heard they may not try for the front. But you know, in my view, you have National Treasure, Mage, and First Mission. Really are the only forwardly placed horses in the race. I think he's going to be close. I think on the sheets, on the thoroughgraphs, he's competitive with everybody except Maj, and can't let one horse scare you in the Preakness. Sometimes the track at Pimlico, Preakness Day, can be very kind to front runners, and if he does get out and get loose, I think he could be very dangerous.
Well, the other thing it seems to me, Richard, is Mage's his two best races. He has shown speed, but his best races have been coming from well off the pace, and as you just said, there may not be much of that.
It does not look to be, you know, much of that. Most grace horses can show speed when they want to. If Mage is a great horse, then clearly he will. I don't think they're going to change his running style, you know, for the Preakness. I think the horse came from way back in the Derby. I suspect he won't be 15 lengths back in this race, but I think he will be towards the rear of the field as they enter the backstretch.
Now, what do you think about, I mean, I think a horse that's going to get a lot of play here, obviously, 5-2 morning line is First Mission, breaking from the outside, going to be forwardly placed. What's your take on him?
Obviously, very dangerous horse. Brad Cox is as hot as any trainer in the country. This horse will be forwardly placed. Because he's outside, they're going to have to send. That doesn't mean they have to make the lead, but they're not going to be sitting fifth or sixth. He'll be 1, 2, or 3. Again, I think National Treasure, because he's on the inside, has to go. Coffee with Chris has natural speed and First Mission. So I think that's going to be the first flight of horses. Not 100% sure which one will be in front, but because Coffee with Chris is going to be such a large price, I think he's the play.
Yeah, and it's actually interesting. As you said, those three horses probably going to be the vanguard, National Treasure, First Mission, Coffee with Chris. And, you know, I was talking with John Saltzman, the trainer of Coffee with Chris, before, and I think it's quite conceivable those three might not be going that fast and might still be five clear of everybody else.
That's the way I see the race, and if Coffee with Chris finds himself on the lead because he's the local horse, and he's such a big price horse, I don't think anybody's going to be shooting for him to take him out of the race. I think if he does get clear, I think it's his race to win or lose, depending how good he is.
That's interesting what you said about the sheet numbers. He looks pretty competitive because on the buyers, he looks a tick below several.
That's exactly right. The sheet numbers, as occasionally happens, point out other horses. That's one reason to get them. And he runs threes. National Treasure runs threes. First Mission runs threes. Maj runs zero, you know, around a zero in the Derby, going 1.25 miles. That's a real number. That's a classic horse number. We'll have to see how it plays out here.
All right, last question. We'll cut you loose. Favorite Preakness memory?
I had a horse that won the fourth race on Preakness Day in 2004, live on ESPN, named Bust, with Kent DeSarmo on. So that's my favorite. That's my favorite Preakness Day memory.
That's a good one. All right, Richard Hackerman, attorney at law. RichardHackerman.com is the website. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Frank, for having me.
Richard Hackerman, attorney at law, good friend of this program. Let's bring in Nick Hahn now. Handicap the 148th running of the Preakness Stakes and get a little bit of a sense of what's been going on the backstretch, what people are talking about on the backstretch at Old Hilltop this week. Nick Hahn joins us.
Well, Nick Hahn, welcome back to the program here on Off to the Races Radio.
You've been on the backstretch at Pimlico the last few days. Tell me what you're seeing, what you're hearing, what's the atmosphere?
I'm waiting to see Mage with four legs on the ground because I'm not sure I've seen that yet. He's been walking around on his hind legs a little bit, but he's really looked good. He's been in control. He does get fired up. We talked to Gustavo Delgado about that, and he just said that he's just sort of feeling his oats right now, and it shows up everywhere on the backstretch with him. There's some compelling horses for me. National Treasure, I think, looked pretty good this morning, and pairing that up with the PPs, I think this is a horse that I can move up in my Preakness selections. I really didn't see a whole lot out of the long shots. Coffee with Chris, Chase the Chaos. They're not horses that seem to be on the same level. Perform does. Perform's one of the longer shot horses, I think, that could be a factor in the race. But yeah, it's been great weather the whole time up here. Hopefully it hangs together long enough through the race.
Yeah, let's hope for that. Let's talk about Perform for a minute, because he's not coming up a lot in my conversations, but I think he's kind of an interesting horse for really two reasons. One, his connections liked him enough to supplement him to the Triple Crown Series. That cost him $150,000 to run in the Preakness, which is no small change if you got to think you're going to run pretty well to try to put up that kind of money. The second thing is his win in the Tessio, I thought was very interesting. I mean, it's the Tessio. It's not a top-level prep for anything. But the move he made in the stretch was very, very athletic. And then he came home very fast in that last 70 yards or so to get the money. What's your take on Perform?
I like the breeding a lot. Good Magic was my pick in the Derby and Preakness back in 2018. I still remember the Derby. I thought he was going to win it when I saw Justify down on the rail and was just waiting for Justify to drown in that slop, and he never did. He just skipped across it like a stone. He looks good, Perform. He just has a sort of a glow about him. He's just a good-looking horse, at least to me. So I think this is a horse, that has a good chance here. He's got an experienced trainer. You don't like to draw a line in the PPs of a horse, but with the supplement, and it's something that's been mentioned several times here. All the earnings that he has basically have gone to pay the supplement for the Preakness. So he's going to be starting from zero on Preakness. But yeah, I think he has a real good chance.
I mean, you basically, to justify that kind of price, that kind of expense, you've got to handicap yourself 1-2-3 in the race. Because if you're not 1-2-3, you lose a lot of money by running in this race. So they do clearly like him a little bit. Now, you mentioned, we'll get back to him in a minute, but you also mentioned Chase the Chaos and Coffee with Chris. And these are cheap horses. And I don't mean that in a pejorative sense. One cost $2,000 at auction. One cost $10,000. I don't guess there have been too many Preaknesses where somebody paid $10,000 for a horse at auction and didn't have the cheapest horse in the race. So no love for the real long shots here.
No, I would take Perform out of all of them. That's mainly just on looks. But, even though there's a distant history with local horses doing well in the Preakness, if not for winning it, it really hasn't surfaced here recently much. This could be the year it does happen with such a small field, and I think with only one horse coming out of the Derby, but I don't really see it out of Perform, Chase the Chaos, or Coffee with Chris. Coffee with Chris had a start at Colonial Downs, ran fifth, so that he's climbing a long way up.
No, and he has climbed a long way up. He's won a couple of stakes. Now, the one argument I think you can make for him, and let's talk about this for a minute, is the pace scenario in this race. The major, major players in this race, well, several of them, including Mage, who's going to be the favorite, they generally come from out of it. There's no confirmed front runner here. There's three horses that have shown a little bit of speed. And so the one argument you could make for a horse like Coffee with Chris is maybe he'll be either by himself on the front or right up close to pretty moderate fractions and will be able to kick on through the lane.
It could be a situation where the hometown jock knows the track a little bit better and that clock works a little better in his head than the other riders who are coming in for the race. I would see that as maybe the only advantage to something like that. But at least that interior clock might work for some of the local riders and perform would benefit, or Coffee with Chris would benefit by that.
Talking with Nick Hahn here on Off to the Races Radio, powered by the Racing Biz. Nick's show, also called Off to the Races in Virginia, airs every Saturday on ESPN Richmond, so check that out as well. Nick, let's put you on the spot then. Who wins?
I'm going to go with, I think it's a story that just seems to be a little bit lost. Maybe it'll rise up as the race gets closer. But Bob Baffert brings in National Treasure. This is a quality road horse. We never really got a good chance to see what the California horses were doing. Practical Move was a scratch, so was Skinner. He finished fourth in that race. I kind of like the running style here. I like the breeding, and he just sort of looked good to me this morning. He just looked very long striding and consistent. Red Route 1 was another horse that sort of had that long stride, at least to me this morning. But I'm going to go there. I'm going to go with Mage, who I think is good enough. I just don't like the price. 8-5, I might even stay on Mage, but I doubt it's going to be that. I think he's going to be even money, maybe even less by post time. And then going to add First Mission there as well. Blazing Sevens is sort of my superfecta roundup, but I have a fear that being the seven horse named Blazing Sevens, he might finish seventh.
My friend Jerry D likes to bet 7-on-7 in the seventh, so we'll see what happens there. All right, National Treasure to win the Preakness Stakes, says Nick Hahn. Now, Nick, before we let you go, did want to ask you, again, you've been at Pimlico for a few days here prior to the Preakness. What else are people talking about on the backside?
Well, I think the lack of Derby starters is very prevalent, and it's, to me, a setting where it brings up the format of the Triple Crown and what Maryland needs and where Maryland's going. Maryland needs, to me, there's a lot of industry talk. Should the Preakness be moved back? How are they going to resolve the plant situations? Do they need two tracks? You know, that kind of, it always sort of surfaces. Every year we sort of find ourselves in the same spot. I have no doubt that next year we're going to be looking at a very, very similar situation. But I think sort of the long-term vision has been brought up, and it's distracting from the Preakness a little bit. That in the short field, it still may turn out to be a great race, great rivalry race, but that's sort of what I hear. There's just a lot of other noise associated with issues inside and outside the industry in Maryland, right?
That's going to do it here for us on this week's Off to the Races Radio, powered by the Racing Biz, theracingbiz.com. Thanks so much for spending a little bit of your Saturday morning with us. We appreciate it. Thanks to our show supporters, including Richard Hackerman, attorney at law, the Maryland Horse Breeders Association, True Valor, and Wanamakers.com. Thanks to all our guests on this week's show, which featured Ramiro Restrepo, Nick Hahn, Richard Hackerman, John Saltzman Jr., and Chris Corman. Keep up with the racing and breeding all week long on the Racing Biz, theracingbiz.com. You can tune in next Saturday, 10 a.m. here on Baltimore Positive Tier, the independent voice for Mid-Atlantic racing and breeding. My name's Frank Vespi. Have a great week, everyone, and happy Preakness!